Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Hello to you, my beautiful embodied soul, floating in that gooey, meaty gumdrop you call your body. You're listening to the Doug Trussell Family Hour podcast, and this is a remarkable and special episode with one of my most mystical friends, Robert Ryan. You probably know his artwork. He does the most beautiful tattoos that I've ever seen in my life. But Robert Ryan's way more than a tattoo artist. He is a highly disciplined, mystical yogi who travels all over the planet, some of the coolest places that you've probably never heard of. And I'm still thinking about some of the stories he told about these secret caves that he just visited. I can't wait for you to hear. Real quick, I'd love it if you'd subscribe to our Patreon over at patreon.com/DTFH. This episode was actually recorded during one of our family gatherings. We have a wonderful community that I would love for you to join. And if you enjoy Robert Ryan, follow him on Twitter. He's at RobertRyan323. All the links you need to find him are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, everybody, without further ado, welcome back to the DTFH, Robert Ryan. Robert, welcome back to the DTFH. To get everybody up to speed here, we were talking on the phone the other day, and you started telling me about this incredible trip you just took. And I guess I have become a true pig, like capitalism has like infected me so much that I said, wait, don't tell me anything. Let's do this as a DTFH. And then later I thought, why not mix the two together and see what happens? But that's how we ended up where we're at today, my sweet family. And so now I'm going to give the mic to Robert because he just went on this insane, beautiful spiritual trip. And I want to hear every detail.
Thank you. I don't think it was a capitalist tendency because what I've been learning going on these pilgrimages that is super important to bring a little something back from it, you know, and share it. And that's why not? Like, why would you even bother to make a trip to a holy mountain and not bring some of that back with you? Your trip would be a waste of time in any other way. So I'm happy to share it. And I don't think it's not a commodification of our friendship or our conversation. But well, I know what you mean, you know, like, yeah, you just want to like run to the mountaintop and scream it from there. And like, you know, I definitely need to be a little careful about how I talk about a lot of these pilgrimages, especially this current one, because the place I went is pretty secret. It's a hidden place. But I can say that I was brought by my guru, whose name is Rudra Abhishek, to a mountain range in the Balkans. And explored a series of caves that are man-made by the Trussian people, ancient people. They're saying that they could be 6,000 to 8,000 years old. They definitely predate Christ. And what they were temples that were built into the mountain to worship the Divine Mother.
Wow. Now,
so they're in the shape of a uterus.
You sent me some pictures. I showed one to Erin and she was just like, whoa, that is That is most certainly not just a uterus. It looks like a pre-birth. It looks like they're about to give birth to something. When you mentioned you just gave us a lot of information, by the way. Your guru, is he from the Balkans?
No, he's not. He has some devotees that are from that area that were a little bit familiar with the lore of these uteruses. But he's from Spain. So he's from Europe. And someone had told him about them, and he said, well, you know, he felt the call to go worship there. So he had went on a personal pilgrimage to this place, and he felt her presence so strongly there that he brought us back.
Wow.
With him, yeah.
Wow. Now, I guess the many things that have blown my mind about this trip is like this idea of the Prussian people. I was Googling Prussian people. I was not Prussian. We know the Prussian people. I was Googling at you. I couldn't really find a lot of information on them. But after seeing these pictures, which folks who are watching live, I think I know a way that I can share the screen, a different screen, so you can see these pictures. But we'll do it after we finish this conversation. Who were these people?
I don't know much about them. I do know that they were like probably what the pagan people of Europe would be like in that region, but it's definitely, there's a huge Vedic influence there too. And, you know, I think it's possibly from a different age entirely that these were being used as temples and worshiped there. But they, I would, you know, they have like their version of Stonehenge. So I think they were probably like similar to pagans, maybe later on in time before Christ. But way back, I think it's a whole other group of people, you know, that were inhabiting this planet before, you know, a completely different system. You know, if you believe in the Yuga system, it was from a different Yuga, possibly.
Okay, like what some people would say pre-flood or.
Yeah, pre-deluge. Yeah,
pre-deluge. Yeah. Pre. Yeah. What is it? The Graham Hancock talks about the comet impact during the Lesser Dryas, but like this is the thing that got rid of the mammoths and the
pre-extinction. Yeah,
saber tooth. Exactly, but these people might have been living with those creatures. But there, it's not like, you know, the it's not like the myth of like the savage caveman. It's like these were very, very advanced people. Who were reaching the end
just
of
to have the technology to be able to build these things, you know, to carve these out. And I mean, we hiked pretty high up to get to these places, and it wasn't easy to bring any kind of tools and things like that. We were bringing stuff to worship, and we had a difficult time. And, you know, just to be able to create such a place in that environment, they had to be pretty advanced.
When you say you're bringing tools to worship, maybe you could talk a little bit about what your guru's plan was for this trip.
Well, it was amazing because one of the major themes of the trip was like kind of he was encouraging us to let go of our ideas of what we thought God would be or spirituality or even worship would be. And just to be able to be like absorbed in the grace of being in these caves, you know, and like he was kind of setting us up, you know, like helping us connect with the more subtle energy of this cave. So like one of the caves that we visited, he did a silent meditation, but we began with we began with Om and Hrim, those two. So we chanted those, and I'm not kidding, man. Those syllables filled the cave, and they stayed there our entire meditation. So it was completely silent. And
wow.
He was drawing like yantras in the ground, and that would change the vibration of the cave. Or he was kind of working with these subtle vibrations, but like really kind of like nurturing them and like connecting with them. And just like the idea of the Divine Mother is she's the expression of the consciousness, you know. Like there's the idea of Purushat and Prakriti. So Purushat is like the dormant kinetic energy, and property is the kinetic energy, you know, and that's like when it's the god and the goddess, one's like the dormant and one's the potential and the kinetic,
you know,
and then also the subject and the object, you know, and the doer and the done. So, yeah. So
that sounds so crazy.
Yeah.
You're saying that he started chanting these mantras and they like, it's like they stayed, they just hovered there around you without.
We chanted them together. Yeah. And they just filled the room and they were present. We stopped chanting it and it was there, you know, until we left, you know.
It sounds like someone like logging, like, I mean, not to completely reduce it to something as unmystical as possible, but it sounds like someone walking in, like in some future apocalyptic situation, knowing how to use a computer. You know what I mean? Like recognizing this tech, this is a technology and I know how to, I can interact with it a little bit is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. And that's really what sadhana is. It's the technology. You know, sadhana is like your practice, your connection with the divine, and you learn the technology to work with the elements of the divine in order to manifest it in yourself, you know, and that's what he's encouraging us to do, is manifest this energy, this vibration of the Devi, and have it in our lives, and so we could be able to see her in all we do, and in our actions, in our thoughts, and in everything. And he's really like good about encouraging like the highs and lows in life too. Like not all the good stuff that happens still, it still comes from her. It still comes from the divine. It still comes from the grace of the divine. Everything happens by it. So he's really good at, he doesn't sugarcoat it at all, you know, and he knows how dry and difficult a life like this can be.
He is very, from my understanding of him, is he's like a strict guru. Is that an accurate description of him?
Yeah, for lack of a better word, he's direct, you know, and he keeps it real 100%, you know, and he can joke. He has a great sense of humor. He loves, like, you know, just talking like friends talk, you know, and there was a lot of that on this trip, which was really sweet and beautiful too. But when he gets down to business, he gets down to business, and he doesn't bend on anything. His focus is very strong, and nothing can really derail him. I've never seen him derailed by some pretty insane obstacles. He can't be moved.
If your friend is feeling bad or mad or down, try cheering them up with a surprise lotion clown. SurpriseLotionClown.com.
I want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. And I know you're thinking, why did you start a Squarespace ad with an ad for SurpriseLotionClown.com? Here's why. The domain SurpriseLotionClown.com is available. I'm going to play some spiritual music and let you integrate that data that you just received.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Quince. You know, when people like want to support the podcast, they send whatever it is that they have. And sometimes you have to say no because it blows. And I'm a skeptical, cynical guy. Look, I don't know how to deal with the cosmic predicament of being a human being existing in an infinite void. And sometimes I veer towards nihilism. So I generally have a low expectation. My wife loves Quince. That didn't change my expectation until I slid on a pair of Quince's Flowknit performance joggers. Let me tell you something, man. I don't generally like wearing sweatpants. I don't generally like this stuff. I'm a Never nude. I've mentioned that many times, and I'll just walk around with jeans on. I know that's crazy, but I love these. They're my go-to when I'm going on the road. This is what I sleep in. Very soft, very nice, and everybody knows about my incredibly sensitive bottom. I have a sensitive bottom syndrome, so that means that I chafe. And Quince, these pants are great, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't recommend them if I didn't love them. My wife loves them. I mean, not the same pants. We don't share sweatpants, but she loves Quince. Quince has all the things you actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. This is the best part. Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middleman, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, premium fabrics, and finishes. Elevate your closet with Quince. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/Duncan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Duncan. Now, some backstory here. It's not like this person just met you and then said, let's go up to the Balkans to a mystical cave to commune with the Divine Mother. You've been going through for a while now what seems to be some pretty rigorous purification rituals. Is that what you could call them? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So he's been helping me for the last 12 years with the purification process in this life. You know, every single journey I've gone on with him, or every teaching he's taught me, there's been a process of purification for sure. And it's been very carefully built into me, this purification process. You know, like he won't teach you something until you're ready to learn it, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of process. And he's very careful because he knows that there's a lot of damage can be done in a lot of this work. You know, you're dealing with like huge amounts of energy and awareness and stuff that, you know, if you're not ready for it, it can really throw your life into like a ditch, you know?
Yeah. Well, what do you mean a ditch? Like, you mean like, because you sort of recognize this transcendent reality, you disconnect with the earth, you mean? Or?
Yeah. And just like, you're constantly have to challenge your mind, you know? So you're constantly challenging your mind. You're challenging your thoughts. You're challenging your ego. You know, just to sit on the floor can be such a battle. That's the
right.
Kurukshetra in the Bhagavad Gita, is just getting on the floor and sitting still for a moment.
By Kurukshetra, he means the battle that the battlefield of the
is our body.
Yeah,
you know, like that's going on. The battles, we're always waging the war. You know, and like the outward wars that we see happening in society are the inward wars that we're fighting every day. You know, they manifest on physical battlefields just as much as emotional and spiritual battlefield.
Okay, this is so, I'm getting goosebumps now that you're mentioning this this concept of the battlefield or the field, only because this is where I'm at. While you're building temples, going to the Balkans and mystical caves, I'm listening to the Bhagavad Gita audiobook and mowing my lawn. So this is my level, but which is I like that level. But I'm listening to it, and clearly this moment was supposed to happen because I got absorbed into a verse that I've always found to be somewhat mysterious, and I've wondered if it's a translation issue or something. Maybe you can help me understand it, which is Krishna is telling Arjuna, he's saying, there is the field and the knower of the field. So
yes.
You know that the verse I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I always thought to myself, is he meaning like the battlefield, or is this more like an energy field, or But is that kind of what you're talking? Is that a literal sort of concept, which is like your body is no different from the battlefield of sacred duty in the Bhagavad Gita?
I think that's a great way of explaining it. The field is the self, and the knower of the field is the knower of the self. And that's the one, I think, later on in that verse, that's who it becomes dear to me, I think he says, or something like that.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's what it is. The field, the unified field is the self, is consciousness. You know, we're unified through consciousness in this world to every single aspect of this world. So to know the self is to know the outside world as well.
Okay. And if the mother is consciousness, then we're sort of, we are the mother then, or we are there, or like we're there. We never left the mother's breast. As long as we have consciousness, it's like a result of communion, even if we don't recognize it.
Yeah, that's why I'm climbing mountains to climb into uteruses. <You know? laughs>
Trying to get back in.
Which was amazing to be in the uterus, because if you were sitting facing in the cave, you enter through the cave mouth, and then the uterus is like carved inside the cave. So if you were facing it, you would get this overwhelming, amazing feeling of absorption, you know, and like this kind of magnetic pull towards it.
Whoa.
And if you face the other way, facing out, looking out into the world, it was this sense of birth and expression.
Whoa. You know?
So you were, you know, there was like a dying state and a being born state happening within the cave, if you could tune your awareness towards that.
That was so crazy.
I've never had that kind of experience through nature. You know what I mean? Like, I've gone to sacred rivers. I've been to quite a few sacred mountains, but they've had temples on them. This was just like, you're in nature. And yeah, the expression of the people, the artists that made these masterpieces in the caves, it did take me to sit in there to figure it out. But it taught me like kind of being born from the earth and going back into the earth in this life and many other lives.
This is making me think of one of the weirdest ketamine trips I ever had, where some stone elemental like was in a cave gesturing for me to follow it into the cave. And then I'm, you know, in the ketamine vision, I'm like, oh, sure. Why not? Why wouldn't you? And I followed it in, but then I became the cave, became the mountain, became everything, you know, it had tricked me or something. But that's what it makes me think of, is that how very close at any given moment a human life is to becoming the earth. Like, you know, we are the earth, but I mean fully letting go and merging. I just never thought of it somehow as going back into the womb. That's pretty trippy.
Yeah. Going in, going back out, you know, the cycle.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Quince. You know, when people like want to support the podcast, they send whatever it is that they have. And sometimes you have to say no because it blows. And I'm a skeptical, cynical guy. Look, I don't know how to deal with the cosmic predicament of being a human being existing in an infinite void. And sometimes I veer towards nihilism. So I generally have a low expectation. My wife loves Quince. That didn't change my expectation until I slid on a pair of Quince's Flowknit performance joggers. Let me tell you something, man. I don't generally like wearing sweatpants. I don't generally like this stuff. I'm a never nude. I've mentioned that many times, and I'll just walk around with jeans on. I know that's crazy, but I love these. They're my go-to when I'm going on the road. This is what I sleep in. Very soft. Very nice, and everybody knows about my incredibly sensitive bottom. I have a sensitive bottom syndrome, so that means that I chafe. And Quince, is, these pants are great, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't recommend them if I didn't love them. My wife loves them. I mean, not the same pants. We don't share sweatpants, but she loves Quince. Quince has all the things you actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. This is the best part. Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middleman, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, premium fabrics, and finishes. Elevate your closet with Quince. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Duncan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Duncan.
It's funny you said I had been in a psilocybin trip with a friend of mine, and we were going to visit some caves in the South in the United States, and the next day, but he had he'd gone into this like kind of meltdown, kind of like heavy metal Rob Zombie kind of. He was like on his knees, kind of looked like a werewolf, and was going, "I am the cave, I am the cave." Which was amazing because we were going to visit him the next days, but it's funny that you said that. So maybe that's like an archetypal psychedelic experience.
Yeah, merging with the earth, becoming part of the base level reality, just pure stone. Pure, you know, they call it getting stoned. I guess why they call it getting stoned.
Whoa, merging with a plate of like cheese fries at a diner at 2 o'clock in the morning as you're coming down off an LSD.
You know what? When I was on ketamine, a cheese fry elemental lured me into a bowl of cheese fries. I became a cheese fry. When your guru takes you to a place like this and you realize that, you know, I guess you already understand who you're dealing with, but do you wonder, like, where did he learn to do this? Where did he get the teaching from to know to come to this cave, or to be smart enough to recognize that this cave was a mystical place and to understand how to interact with it? Like, where is that coming from? Is that from his guru? Or is that?
He has gurus and masters that he learned from, but it's a past life thing for sure to me. Like, I've had too many experiences with this soul that I know that we've been connected on different. We've been connected in other lives for a long time, and I can see the way he can read a situation or how he conducts himself. Like, this is a full life's work, not just a 75-year work. This is thousands of years, you know.
Wow.
This being's been, and you know, it's crazy. We were visiting, and it's funny. I picked a picture. Duncan had asked me to send some pictures to him. And one of the pictures that I picked was this, it was a samadhi of a saint who is mummified. Is one of the few in India where the body is actually outside of a tomb, because the holy people they'll get put into the ground, you know, and that's where they maintain the state of samadhi underground. So this one's above ground, and it's like a mummified samadhi. And we went to visit that place, and there was a painting on the wall, and there was a painting of one of the saint's students, and it was a painting of my guru.
Wow.
Like, it looked just like him.
Wow.
And he said he had showed that picture to his mom, and she cried when she saw it, because she knew, right? Ooh.
You know, so. That's so, I think we've talked about this, it's worth talking about again, but that's one of my favorite Neem Karoli Baba stories. Is you know, he was having darshan, and a woman saw him and started crying, and said, "You're my father's guru. You're my father's guru." You know, and but that would have been, it would have been impossible because of his age for that to happen. And then he said to her something along the lines of, he started crying and said, "I went up into the mountains. I went up into the mountains." And like that.
Wow. Yeah. I never heard that story before.
I was just like, whoa. What,
yeah, I've never heard that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, you know, I like, it's a recurring theme in guru stories, is this sort of like not being sort of not hanging out in the time stream the way we are. It is. Krishna talks about it in the Bhagavad Gita, saying, as I recall, something along the lines of, there was never a time when you did not exist. You know, but I can remember. I remember. You, yes, don't. Yeah. That's the difference. Yeah. But people who seem to be like truly enlightened, they are given the gift of the remission of whatever that kind of amnesia is. That,
sure, and they get hints of it all the time, right? Like people come to them that have been connected to them, so they're constantly being reminded of it. Or I don't know. Yeah, I think they're very aware of their pasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, whenever, I wouldn't advise this necessarily, but whenever you feel like playing around with the, just kicking around, like, wonder what it would be like to be enlightened. And that's probably a horrible trap, because the more you kind of come up with that version of it, probably the further away from it you're going to get. But still, just thinking of the difference in the way that I would act in the world, or that the way my consciousness would manifest if I didn't have amnesia of what happened before this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It could be, it's like seeing x-ray, you know, like it's like being able to see everyone's organs, you know, or like, I was mentioning samadhi before, like the state of samadhi, and what they call samadhis, like, these are called jiva samadhis, where the soul remains, even though the body's not functioning in the world anymore. And then there's different states of samadhi that you reach through meditation or awareness. And I've met people that have entered the later states of samadhi and chose to come back to either teach or just chose to come back to give blessings. And those people are operating on a completely different, like, they're in the United States, they would be put into homes, you know, like institutionalized. In India, people recognize them, you know, and all over the world. I know, like in other, you know, indigenous societies, or a lot of people that might have been viewed as having like a bipolar or multiple personality disorders are the shamans of those villages, because they can, you know, traverse into different worlds. But I've met some of these saints, they're called Siddhars in South India, and they're just like checked out. Like they don't make any rational sense to us, but you can tell that they're operating in like a different dimension, but living in this world.
It's crazy how the indoctrination that happens when you're born in the United States makes you so completely blind to that sort of thing, and how the system here is set up in a way that it accidentally, maybe not accidentally, seems to relegate people like that to institutions. How many saints and mystics do we have in this country right now who walk around with this diagnosis that they've been given, who have this sense of, like, you know, I think it's changing a little bit now. Like the field of mental health is changing. We're coming up with like better ways to talk about it. Like the West is just coming to the driveway of what India figured out, what any ancient society would figure out. But because now we're coming up with new names to talk about it. Multiple personality disorder, for example, it's being changed. Like now I think they call themselves systems, actually, you know. So it's an acknowledgement of, like, don't call it a disorder. This is one of the ways consciousness manifests. And, you know, my body has become a kind of like I don't know what you call it, a field, but there's more than one creature in this field, you know? And so, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like, I mean, how many, have you ever had the thing happen where you're walking down the street, you pass someone who is in another country, would be one of these people, you're having some paranoid fantasy, thinking about something, maybe someone named, I've had this happen where I've been thinking like about, you know, someone named William, who I was just thinking about. You walk by someone like that and they just start going, William, where's yeah. William? William, William, yeah. You know what I mean? But they don't have, but they haven't been trained. So it's an aberration. And, you know, it's been a very difficult life for them to have to like be able to have that ability or whatever you want to call it, and no cultural reference for it, depending on where they were born.
Yeah, they're able to see, you know, a soul as a soul, or possibly see a spirit or a ghost, you know, or a interdimensional being. And, you know, then they're drugged and dumbed down, or, you know, put in an institution. Or
lobotomized.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And you know, I don't want to confuse people who have achieved, you know, some sort of amazing yogic initiation with someone who might just be
schizophrenic
or just, but I think there's something there, you know, that these people, I think the ones that I met, these Cedars, I think they probably started out like, probably went to the school, and you don't know anything about their history, you know, but I think, or yeah, I don't, it's a confusing thing. Cause I think there is, of course, there's a terrible mental health problem in the world.
Yeah.
And we just keep adding to it every day, but there are people out there that could be confused as out of their minds, and they're really truly out of their minds, but into their souls.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Quince. You know, when people like want to support the podcast, they send whatever it is that they have. And sometimes you have to say no because it blows. And I'm a skeptical, cynical guy. Look, I don't know how to deal with the cosmic predicament of being a human being existing in an infinite void. And sometimes I veer towards nihilism. So I generally have a low expectation. My wife loves Quince. That didn't change my expectation until I slid on a pair of Quince's Flowknit performance joggers. Let me tell you something, man. I don't generally like wearing sweatpants. I don't generally like this stuff. I'm a never nude. I've mentioned that many times, and I'll just walk around with jeans on. I know that's crazy, but I love these. They're my go-to when I'm going on the road. This is what I sleep in. Very soft, very nice. And everybody knows about my incredibly sensitive bottom. I have a sensitive bottom syndrome. So that means that I chafe. And Quince is, these pants are great, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't recommend them if I didn't love them. My wife loves them. I mean, not the same pants. We don't share sweatpants, but she loves Quince. Quince has all the things you actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. This is the best part. Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middleman, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, premium fabrics, and finishes. Elevate your closet with Quince. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping on your order in 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Duncan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Duncan. Okay. It's a little bit of a divergence, but it completely connects. Because I just interviewed Jeremy Corbell, who has been putting out a lot of these UFO videos that are all over the news and stuff. And, you know, we were talking about the, and he just posted this great Instagram video, but we were talking about the suppression of UFO reports from people in the military. And so there's a physicist talking about in the 50s and 60s, there was actually a directive to suppress anyone reporting that they'd seen a UFO. And there was actually a fine if you were in the military and you reported it, because everyone was seeing them and everyone was experiencing it. And they didn't want the American people to know that this shit was flying around, that the military had no idea what it was. And so the information was suppressed. Similarly, And I agree with you. We do have to make a distinction between people with legitimate, like, neurological disorders and things like that, and like mystics, I guess. But I think there's no reason why anyone couldn't be a mystic, regardless of what circuitry they're running. But the problem is, for like, if I see a ghost, which I've seen, I will talk about it. I'll talk about it on the podcast. I'll tell my meditation teacher. You know, I remember seeing a friend of mine who committed suicide. And, you know, as I've come to understand how I see ghosts, you know, and like not even knowing what to do, just looking over and there and really, you know, see, I don't know if you've ever seen a suicide ghost, but they're very confused. Usually they're very confused and they usually think they're in a dream or something. They have this sense of like, they don't realize that they're dead. Because probably when they were killing themselves, maybe they were already kind of asleep or something. I don't know. But anyway,
yeah, it's like a crossroads. There's a crossroads.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember my meditation teacher very seriously saying, you know, when you see that, you're supposed to tell them they've died. Like, that's the directive, is you need to let them know that they're not, it's not a dream. Like, you're dead. You dropped.
Yeah, there was
your
nothing there to guide them towards it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm lucky because I'm surrounded by like people like you who I can talk about things like that with without being shamed for it. A lot of people don't have that. And so when, you know, and so there is I want to say an accidental suppression happening in the West, but I don't know. Again, I'm not sure it's accidental. Like here, it's like there's the if you are in the wrong company and you start talking about ghosts, you're going to get eye rolled into the next dimension, man. You know, people are, you're not going to get a job. Like if you're in a job interview and you mention, oh, I do believe in the existence of ghosts, gnomes, fairies, whatever, you're like, okay, you're fucking nuts. Even though it's a legitimate biome that we just haven't been able to like quantify yet.
Subjective reality is what it is, you know, and everyone's trying to kind of, there's an agreed illusion that we all join in each day, you know, and anything that challenges that gets tamped down very fast, you know. Like a good example of it is money. You know, you look at money, it's this magic talisman in each of your pockets, and it's only worth what you believe it to be, you know. And once that concept gets challenged, it immediately gets put down, you know.
Yeah.
And that's I feel like that it's just to continue this idea of what everyone thinks they are, what they could be, and what they truly are, always gets kind of like, it's only for the people that, for the known, you know, like that kind of thing.
Right.
It shouldn't really be esoteric knowledge. The fact that there is that kind of suppression of the truth or the trueness of, or the awareness of the true reality, there comes, you know, powers. You can get powers because you start manipulating the, you know.
Right.
You know.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I do it with Forrest, my 2.5-year-old. Cause if we're playing with toys, I'll palm something. Like, I'm a horrible magician, but when you're dealing with a 2.5-year-old, you're fucking David Copperfield, man. Like, it's the most astounding thing they've ever seen because no one's run the awful, like, you know, wiggle your hands, distract him with this hand, put the ball behind your back. Where'd it go? He's like, oh, God, it's a true miracle. So what you're saying is same thing at a different level, yeah. Which is like, yeah. if you can like keep people isolated from certain types of information, it's going to make you seem that much more astounding when you deliver one of these miracles that should just be a normal way that humans interact in this dimension.
Yeah.
Wow. That's trippy, man. Sorcery. It's like sorcerers took over and then like just, but that being said, any person alive today has access to the same information that you had access to that vacuumed in you into this path. And I mean, let's not forget that right now you're sitting in a temple you constructed. You're in a temple right now. This is you are a person. You are my only friend who has constructed a temple, and not like the way I put up temples. I'll just like throw a Ram Dass picture up, throw Buddha in front of my meditation, but you like actually installed deities in this temple. And that is no small feat, because can you talk about like what goes into that?
Yeah, it's a pretty long process. I feel like there were efforts that I made to make this temple occur here in my life, but it occurred in my life beyond any of my reach. You know, it kind of built itself around me. And with the help of many friends, with the help of my teacher, and with the grace of the divine, like I couldn't have, if it would have been insane for me to even think about 5 years ago, but just being kind of cued into the awareness of like worship in your community can bring great benefit to you and the people around you, I started working on this temple. But that idea didn't like, I didn't think that up, you know what I mean? Like it was brought to me, it was given to me, and now it's my job to facilitate it. And I think that every one of us builds a temple of some sort, and we worship deities all the time. It's just, which deity do you choose to put the garland on? And unfortunately, I do it, and I've done it my whole life. I've put the big garland on the big ego, you know? No, and when you start kind of stepping away from that and realizing that, you know, your efforts could be, you know, the ego is always going to be involved. And that's, I think that's the beauty of a lot of the Sanatan Dharma, all the powerful dharmas that are being taught, that you don't get rid of the ego. You work with the ego, yes. You know, and you don't put the ego first. And
you say Sanatan Dharma, can you let people know what that means?
That's the eternal Dharma. That's the Dharma of like all the Vaishnavas, the Shivas, the Shaktis, all of them together, the big movement towards understanding of the self and the dance with the people and God. And that could expand even further out to all the other religions as well. But the continuing teaching, the continuing of tradition, the continuing of ritual, the continuing of mantra, yantra, you know, all of it, the pushing it forward, that's the Dharma. That's the Sanatana Dharma.
Now, when you talk about this idea of like hanging the garland on whatever deity you choose, reminds me a little bit of sort of the Ernest Holmes New Thought, the manifestation stuff. In other words, like, and it's in the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, all these trippy concepts are in this incredible book, but you know, those who worship the demigods go to the demigods. Yeah. Those who worship me, you know, come to me. Me being, you know, the divine, the identity. But there is within Buddhism and Hinduism this idea of like there's this potential for true, whatever you want to call it, transcendence, eternal liberation. But also, if you want to, you can, you know, go to other you can go to other like celestial planets when you die. You can go to the realms of the gods from like building up good merit. the same thing that happens on planet Earth, which is if you become, this is to me one of the great weird paradoxes of generosity, is that the more generous you become, weirdly, the more things come to you. Like you, if the more you give away, the more you get. And if and then you it's like you realize, oh, this is some form of magic here, and it doesn't even seem to care if I'm giving stuff away, with the understanding that this will probably bring stuff to me. It just is. It's like some kind of physics or something. So the idea is that doesn't just end up with you having good luck for a year straight or getting all these weird synchronicities that lead you to things. It can eventually make you, eventually you could become a demigod from these sorts of things, but then you fall back down into human birth. But also, you know, if you decide to start hanging your garland on cynicism, on secularism or hardcore materialism or whatever the fuck it is, you're going to get that too. That's the way it's going to show up.
Yeah, you get all that, you know, and like and nothing happens without an exchange, you know, like you don't ever get anything from nothing, you know. So wherever you're pointing your direction towards, you will, you know, you will one day reach it. You might not reach it the way you thought you were.
Right.
You know, and that's where the mind starts getting involved and starts getting, you know, that's when you start getting into the jungle of the mind, you know. And that's why you see a lot of suffering where, you know, like when you choose those things to worship, you know, like where if you choose to worship goodness, there's no mistaking goodness in your life. But when you start worshiping the path of the sugary, you know, the honey path of the easy way out of all things, you're going to find that it wasn't very easy at all.
No, no.
I guess that's the division, you know, like what you choose to worship and how you get it.
To me, that's what I love about the idea of God being so generous, that it's not like you have to like worship Krishna according to or Shiva, or it's not like you have to worship this in the traditional sense. They're so merciful that the idea is like, oh, if you just think that I'm death, then I will. That's what I'll be for you. I'll be your death. If that's how you want to interact with me, that's how we'll do it. Or if you want, you know, it's all things. But it seems like the moment you start recognizing that, a natural kind of updraft starts happening, right? The moment you start recognizing, like, even whatever this particular relatively degraded sort of fixation I have on this thing or that thing, there is within it the potential for liberation. When you start realizing what you're fixated on, no matter what it may be, as vile as it may be, which is that other verse. I don't know. I love talking about the Gita with you because you know it. You know, even the vilest of criminals, if their minds are absorbed in me, will cross over the material, will cross through samsara as easy as stepping over a puddle, something like that. Mm-hmm. But that the absorption into anything, isn't that the absorption into God, even if you don't recognize that that's God?
Yeah, the perpetual motion, you know, there's momentum once you start going towards something like that, you know, whether you start going towards God or whether you start going towards alcohol, there's a momentum that builds up, you know, and if, you know, you can, through our perception, you can see what the result of each one is, you know, but, yeah, I think that's what it is. That there, like you said, the stream starts happening, and what happens is the flow starts happening because you stop swimming against the stream and you start going with it.
You know? Oh, cool!
Because your mind's going to talk you out of it any chance it gets.
Yes,
you know, like, and that's something I'm sure you've learned through meditation. Like, there's so many ways to talk yourself out of just sitting on the ground.
Oh. A million reasons to not meditate. That's a good book. A million reasons not to meditate. It's boring. It hurts. You're gonna look like an idiot. Don't do it.
Your friends are gonna make fun of you, you know, your family will hate you.
You're gonna annoy the shit out of everybody when you get too happy and they're all depressed. But you know, again, that's another for me, like that's something that I love experimenting with, is Because, you know, my ego, it always wants me to be right. It wants to win. It has this insane idea that, you know, almost it's better to be just a walking defense mechanism than vulnerable. And so anytime I've managed to, like, go with the flow of love, anytime my defense mechanisms are up and there's a chance to be right, but instead you just start truly just opening up to somebody who's, you know, and saying, like, you know, I really want you to love me and I really want to love you. And I want, instead of like the defense mechanism talk, which is like, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you at, you know what I mean? When you drop down into that place, it's an alternate dimension. It's like all of us, when you're in the dimension of vulnerability and love, whether it's sitting on the floor meditating or no longer doing the sort of circular, whatever habitual karmic pattern is in your life, that's a result of you constantly trying to be right or constantly trying to like affirm a reality that isn't even there. Holy God. Like, it's the most incredible thing. It's not, all I'm saying is, you know how they say there's 6 degrees of separation between you and any person? I think there's 6 degrees of separation between you and building it, any person and building it, having a temple grow out of them.
Yeah, sure. Or there's six degrees of separation from you becoming president. You know, like,
yeah,
anything. But I think what you're talking about too is the way you start experiencing things when you start experiencing them through the heart and not through the mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Cause you sit on the floor and you meditate because you love yourself. You sit on the floor and you meditate because you love God, because you love the stillness. You love the peace. And you don't sit on the floor and meditate because you think that it's a waste of time, or that you think that you're not good enough, or that the body starts talking and the body hurts, or, you know, or I have other obligations. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
None of that comes from the heart, you know?
No.
That's things talking you out of that stillness, which is true love awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And that true love awareness, it's some kind of beacon, right? It's like, it's not like you go at it alone that long. Like, dropping down into the heart, help comes quickly. Like, whenever I'm praying, whenever my life gets so much better when I'm regularly praying. Like, and it's not like it's like, you know, working out takes a long time, sadly, to like get in shape. But communicating with God through prayer, for me, it's like lightning. It's so fast how quickly things happen in that way. You know, I mean, I think it's important for people to recognize, like, I think with meditation, sometimes it can feel like a solitary sort of thing. But for me, whenever I add into it the component of, and also this is me opening up to God, oh, wow, what a change.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's why, like, I really like, you know, chanting mantra, because you're glorifying God through the names of God and the syllables of God. And, but I also love silent meditation too, because, you know, I can focus my mind on that stillness that is still God too. And that's another stage of God. That's God beyond the concept of God. That's God beyond the picture of God, beyond the color, the smell of God. It's the consciousness of God. So there's different ways to find that love for God through loving yourself.
Yes.
Whether it be mantra, meditation, raking leaves, listening to the Bhagavad Gita while you're mowing your lawn, you know, performing on stage, connecting with people. There's so many different ways, you know, but that's all loving in the heart. And the idea of love, that's when you start to get into like contractual love, like, well, he'll love me if I do this, she'll love me if I do that, I love her so much, she should be doing it, you know. And that's not love, that's the mind. So
oh my God, that's the mind's like hideous, shitty impression of love, like, you know, like that's the mind's like ape impression of this incredible thing.
It's the agreement, you know, or the like the business of love.
Oh my
which
god!
It does exist because we have to use our minds, you know. So that there is that, you know. That's how you manage your relationships and things like that. But if the heart's not driving the chariot, you're in for a big, big disappointment in life.
Oh my god. Right, the heart driving the chariot. Yeah, that's Krishna. And mm-hmm. and what a, I mean, it from, you know, I think the benefit of being in your head and proud of it for most of your life is it's like, what's, it's, I don't know if you've ever seen those sad videos of when they let the laboratory monkeys out of a laboratory, like when they've been rescued. And I mean, I'll cry thinking about it. But there's a beautiful video of these monkeys when they realize they're outside for the first time. They hug each other. They're so happy. And then they're like, you know, they're free. It's that same feeling when you realize, fuck, I don't have to live up in this tiny, shitty room up at the very top of my identity. When you drop down into that place, it is like a blindfold has been taken off of your eyes or something. And you do find yourself in a really much, much, much more beautiful world. And yeah, you don't get hurt. No one exploits you like you think what's going to happen.
Yeah, you move out of the mental ghetto of your mind into the high rise of your heart. And it's just like...
yeah, right, yeah.
And I've done it. I've moved from shitty apartments to beautiful homes. And what a feeling. So you can do that in your life on a daily level. Wow.
Yeah.
What opportunity, you know?
Because it doesn't matter what fucking beautiful home you're living in. If you're up in your head, that home's going to suck. It's you're going to see everything wrong with it, and you're going to be freaked out probably by the mortgage or whatever it is that you're paying
the
for.
The neighbors are going to be loud.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
Grass isn't going to grow.
You could be in your heart in just about any situation. I mean, I can think of a few I wouldn't want to. It doesn't matter. It still sucks, you know? But most situations, it's a beautiful thing. You bring me into my heart. You know, I want to, I think some people probably have some questions, but I wondered if maybe, I don't want to mess the phone situation up, but can you show people your temple a little bit, or is it not for?
Yeah, yeah. I can't see, I don't have a monitor of myself.
Oh, if you move, like you're, I think you're, if you move your head a little to your left. Yeah.
So that's what the are lingam.
We wow.
That's the Shiva lingam. Let's try to go up and see the Divine Mother Kali. Can you see her?
Yeah, wow.
There she is. And then Lord Ganesh over there. Can you see him?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, this is the temple.
And each of those deities, you spent how long to install each one?
The installation was just in a day. But then afterwards, there was a certain ritual that I had to maintain. My guru installed the deities. And then I had to maintain for 30 to 40 days worship of each one. And then my regular now, like what my schedule is now of how I worship them, which is a couple days a week.
You're an incredible person, man.
Oh, you're an incredible person. We're all incredible people.
I
come
know,
on,
man.
You
know? Well, we haven't even talked about your tattoo art. Okay, so by the way, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with Robert Ryan, the greatest, I don't know what the correct term for tattoo artist is, but it has to be the greatest tattoo artist on the planet right now. Like
that's super, super subjective. But yeah, I've been tattooing a long time and I love doing it and I love making tattoos on people. So
Angel is saying, watch his vice. Okay. So now just to be clear, we're still on the right schedule with you. It's 11:18. Do you have,
I got 20 more minutes.
20 more minutes. Okay, beautiful. I think everybody here probably has some questions for you. If you haven't asked a question, y'all, there's an ask a question area where you can ask and then it gets upvoted. I'm going to dive in and see what questions you might have for Robert Ryan. And by the way, Robert, this is something that popped up earlier that definitely counts as a question. When we were talking about gurus or the disciplic succession or your guru having some familiarity with the like these rituals via some access to past life memory or however you want to put it, someone was asking, yeah, but how far back does it go? Like, you know, where does it come from ultimately?
Adi Guru is Lord Shiva. He was the first guru. And there's a discussion between him and Parvati, his wife, where he explains the meaning of the guru. And what happened was a group of sannyasis, who are people who have given their life to God, had passed, and Lord Shiva bowed to them. And Parvati was like, "How come you're bowing? They worship you." And he mm-hmm. said, no. I worship the guru, because he's the light.
Wow.
In all people. The guru liberates the person from darkness to light, and that's why Lord Shiva bows to him. So Shiva is the first guru. So that they say from the original, the primordial sound of Om, that's the guru.
Beautiful. And also, I'm sorry, but Shiva does smoke marijuana, right?
Yeah. There's a big division of that, where a lot of like the more orthodox folks don't think that he does. But I know in the story that I told last time I was on your podcast, where he swallowed the poison.
Yes.
They use bhang, which is marijuana, to massage his throat after he had done that. And I believe that, you know, the depictions of him smoking a chillum, it's to illustrate that he's outside of society. He's that primordial energy. He's a natural. He doesn't wear the flower garland. All the stuff on him is like seeds and snakes, you know. So he doesn't wear jewelry or anything like that. So he's like of the earth. So right. That's just one of those other aspects. But yeah, there's a connection between marijuana and Lord Shiva. But you know, it gets. People argue about it, and it's not an argue that I would like to have.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, I know. Well, yeah,
I think it's definitely that I've spent enough time with sadhus that they worship that plant as a goddess, you know.
I smoked out of marijuana out of a chillum at a Shiva temple in Varanasi. I told you, and I knocked.
I think
picture,
I did the same one. Yeah,
knocked a picture of Shiva off the wall.
Can't take you anywhere, man.
I never will forget it. It's like, that's my karma. I'm sitting there.
No, that's Shiva. That or Devi. That's her showing you. Like, wake up, man. You're not here just to smoke pot.
Oh no. I was so I was so hypnotized by the mantras they were singing, and I was having that beautiful experience that you get to have when you chant mantras, which is an immense familiarity, a feeling of coming home, but also you return to your little identity here, and you're like, what the fuck? Why do I feel like I'm at Thanksgiving dinner with my family? I'm in a temple on the banks of the Ganges River. What is this? This can't be Thanksgiving. Uncle Albert isn't here. What is this? And then that's when I lean back, knocking the Shiva temple picture off the wall. They were sweet though. They just told me to move away from the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what that is too? That's as soon as you started questioning yourself.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sure that happens to you when you're performing on stage, right? Anytime
God.
I ever played music on stage, once I started like, do I know this song? That's when I start clamming, you know, and like.
Yep. Knocking the picture off the wall. That's the name for it from now on. Not bombing. I knocked the Shiva picture off the wall. Okay. Here's a question from my friend Drew Lewis, who is a comedian. Very funny. Is the Divine Mother and Sophia of the Gnostics the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the caves that I was visiting are highly connected to the Gnostics and that story. And I could share with him maybe later or through you, because there's the name Sophia was definitely part of that experience.
Really?
That I was having. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. 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 I'd asked my guru about the Gnostics, if he felt that if there was Christianity happening in those caves, if he thought it was the Gnostics, and he was like, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because that's where you start to see that's the one belief in Christianity, you know, the Gnostic Christians, where they worship the Divine Mother not as Mary, as something else, as Sophia.
Mm.
What? And it's much more aligned with like the Shakti worship in India.
Do you think you could do a millisecond description of what Sophia is in Gnosticism for folks listening who might not know what it means?
Yeah, a real layman's, I'm not nearly well versed with it, but it's Sophia is like the high goddess in the worship in the Gnostics, and she had a son whose name was Yaldabaoth, who is half lion, half serpent. And the story was that she wanted him to be the all one God. And she hid him in a cloud for his entire life and kept him away from society and kept him away from the rest of the things that were happening. So in his mind, he was God. That's where you get the term blind idiot God from, Yaldabaoth. And so it sets up this story where Christ contends with the Yaldabaoth, and that's where we find out who the one true consciousness is.
Are we the Yaldabaoth? Is that
the children of chaos. That's what it translates to. The son of Sophia, the child of chaos. And I'm sure I just butchered that story pretty hard. Pretty cool. But I'm sure there's some Gnostics that can expand on it and correct me and maybe let people know what's up. But it's definitely Sophia is that Divine Mother. Absolutely.
Here's a question. This is a cool one. Has your guru ever sent you into tears of ecstasy? That's from the Noob Druid.
Yes. Tears of ecstasy and tears of shame. not he didn't shame me. I was ashamed myself that I wasn't being totally attentive to what he was teaching me, and I realized like, oh my God, I can't believe I was missing this, you know, this yeah. really potent message. So more tears of ecstasy and tears of joy and tears of laughter, but then also tears of my own demise.
Well, that's a beautiful kind of, you know, those tears are cool. I mean, you know, when people hear shame these days, they're like, that's terrible. But like, I think what you're talking about is, oh God, why am I talking about the Bhagavad Gita? It's because I've just been listening to it. But Arjuna recognizes Krishna as the universal form. And then there's the response is a series of apologies. Like, you know the verse I'm talking about?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
As your friend, I'm sorry.
And he's begging him to go back to his regular form because he just can't even hang with the universal form.
Yeah. Yeah. That I think that must be a common experience with true teachers, is that at some point your life starts getting better, sweetening, you start waking up again or becoming alive again, and you realize there isn't any amount of anything you could have given someone that could possibly repay them for what they've given you, you know? And then in those moments, you're like thinking of all the times you were sarcastic or didn't pay attention or all those times, and you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Taking the work for granted and just like assume that, you know, things were going to be a certain way, just like heaping all our expectations onto something that's being shared with no pretense of reward for them.
None.
You know, like none. They don't need the gurus of the world don't need to be gurus. They're gurus for us, you know. They could have chose to get off the cycle a long time ago. They come back, you know. The Dalai Lama keeps coming back, you know. He doesn't have to.
Yeah, it's like
the same way the gods don't need flowers and incense and flames offered to them. That's for us. That's so we see them in ourselves, in our actions, in our worship, in our prayers. You know, they don't need that. Gods don't need anything. You're a God, you don't need anything. And that's what a true sadhu is someone who's without needs, an efficient person, a It's not a guy dressed up outside a temple in orange, you know. It's no. anybody that has the efficiency to live with it beyond needs.
It's a remarkable thing. It's like, imagine you've learned to swim. I don't know when people usually learn to swim, however old you are. And instead of enjoying the pool that you've been excited about swimming around in, you keep coming back to the kiddie pool to teach other people how to swim. That's pretty cool, you know? Like, yeah. That's like the coolest thing. That's what these people are doing. They don't have to be in this like dramatic vortex of confusion. They can go. And they stay longer than they need to sometimes. Sometimes their bodies are, you know, in a lot of pain, and they stick it out because they love, they want to help so much. It's a really incredible thing to even know someone who knows someone like that. It's like the cool, you can feel it. You know, you feel their energy through their students. Okay, thank you for that. Let me see what we're doing here. It's 11:30. What was the time again?
11:45. Okay. 10 or 15 more minutes.
Okay, beautiful. So, Gage Dizzle wants to know if you bathe your deities.
Yeah, and that's what's called abhishek, which means the ritual bathing of the deities. The one that I bathe here is the Shiva Lingam, because it's set up, you know, this tank here catches the water. So I bathe it with water, milk, ghee, honey, yogurt, and some powders, some sandalwood powder, some sacred ash, and rose water.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's and each step of the bathing of the deity is supposed to be a reflection of the bathing of your soul.
You know, when I was going to the Hare Krishna temples and watching it, highly recommend anyone who can see that ritual. It's the most beautiful thing to see. And then I remember, so I was familiar with what it looked like. And then I walked into a forest room when my wife was putting lotion on him, which is part of the bedtime ritual, is you like,
yeah,
you rub lotion into them, and like you're watching it. It's so much more than just like, I don't know, when I put lotion on myself and kind of haphazardly slap it around, I don't even know why I'm doing this. You're looking at the mother like it's love. It's like watching someone work with clay, or watching this, like, and you recognize, oh my God, it's the oldest. I am watching one of the oldest things there is. That's how what you're bathing the deities, I think it's like, it's like the same thing.
It's totally the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, because when people are bathing the deities, it's not like they're doing it with love. Like when is that correct? When I'm
Love and total attention, because there's like the process of the abhishekam. It's pretty, you know, they're simple versions of it, but for the big ones, you know, there's a lot of steps that you need to do this correctly to maintain the energy. And so it's an attentiveness to the reflection of God within you. Like, because it could just be pouring water over a stone.
Sure.
You know, to someone who's looking from the outside, but from someone who's an aspirant, you're bathing the God within you. And that's what the ritual is designed to do, is to make you more aware of that. And I've noticed when I started doing the abhishekam to the Shiva Lingam that I started kind of using that approach in a lot of the things I do in my day-to-day activities.
Yeah. Like, right. Do you do that with your, where you give tattoos? Do you?
Totally. Yeah. That's where I started really kind of incorporating it, you know, in the tattoo process, working on another person, you know, kind of treating them the way that I would like to be treated, keeping them clean and safe, and trying to do my best to adorn them in the best way possible.
Oh yeah, that's for me. It works like when I come in here to record, you know, if I like spend some time, like not just cleaning it, but cleaning it, thinking like, you know, I hope this becomes a place for inspiration, or it's a completely different feeling, you know, and it's, yeah, that's so cool, man.
You hear stories about Lee Perry doing that in the studio at the Black Ark, the dub guy. He would like put incense and feathers in all the empty ports and stuff like that, and offer fire to all the input jacks and everything like that, just to get it ready for what he was about to do.
I mean, yeah, like people like ask, you know, remember when they found that guy was like working on that old Buchla synth and like got high because someone had put an LSD crystal in there and he touched it.
I've never heard that story.
Yeah. And some people were like, why would you put an acid crystal in a synthesizer? It's like, you've never fucked with a synthesizer if you have to ask that question. It's clear.
Or acid.
I bow to my synthesizers. I really do. I'm not ashamed to admit it. So let me look through here. Here's a great question. And I'm going to try to pronounce Emil Sixilla. Do you have any advice for balancing thoughts of how so much of life is illusory and how we're just stuck to a rock floating through space with functioning like a real person in society? I often find that it's really hard for me to participate in a lot of society stuff because everything seems so fake, but I also feel like I'm missing out on a lot.
I think the first question you have to ask is who's asking that question? You know, like, where's that question coming from? And that question's coming from a place of unchanging reality, you know? And so when you start kind of looking at yourself as like, I can go into these illusions in the world. I can live in this world with all the chaos and craziness that's going on, and I could still be myself. I could still find my center. I can still find peace in my heart. So through the work of yourself, you know, like, and that question is occurring for a reason, you know, like that's coming out of somewhere. That's coming from an awareness of yourself. So the self's not going to change, you know, the adventure suit wears out, you take on a new one, you know, like,
yeah.
The days go on, you know, your body's changing, but the you isn't changing, you know, and it once you start to become a little bit more familiar with yourself in that way, that you can't be really moved, you really can't be stained by all those things that drive you crazy about going out in the world, it's not going to have the same kind of effect on you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I hope that helps. I hope that is good advice.
No, they just wrote that doesn't help. I'm just kidding.
Well, fuck you. No, I hope it does help. And like, and that's something I've dealt with my whole life. I came through that world, you know, like I came through the anti world, the anti heroes. I worship at the punk rock altar, and I still do. You know, I love the, you know, rooting for the bad guys, even.
Yeah.
But you know, like I struggled with the world, and I'll continue to struggle with the world, but I struggle a little bit less when I know why I'm struggling with the world.
Robert Ryan, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here with us and for like all the technical problems in the first 30 minutes they didn't witness, for your divine patience.
That seemed like a lifetime ago, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was a different reality. Can you, some people, I think, are speculating they might be close to your shop. If folks wanted to maybe get a tattoo, or if folks just want to connect with you at all, how can they reach you?
In the physical, I work in Electric Tattoo in Asbury Park, New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore. It's a beautiful town. I take walk-ins on Saturday. It's first come, first serve.
Cool.
You know, it, as long as I can do it within like a 2-hour slot, I can do your tattoo as a walk-in. If you want to make an appointment, you can reach out to me through Instagram. It's Robert Ryan 323. And, or you can email me. There's a link for the email there. You know, you can find me. I'm online too. So, if you want to set up an appointment, you can do that. If you have any kind of questions about what we talked about today, I'll do my best to answer them in a timely fashion.
Thank you. All the links you need to find Robert will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Hare Krishna, Robert Ryan.
Hare Krishna, Duncan Trussell. Haribo, Haribo.
That was Robert Ryan, everybody. You can find him at Robert Ryan 323. And a big thank you to HelloFresh, Squarespace, and BetterHelp for supporting this episode of the DTFH. And of course, most importantly, thank you for listening. I'll see y'all next week. Hope you have a wonderful weekend or week or wherever you may be. Until then, Hare Krishna.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.